So what do we say and how if we change the words for alcohol to food and compulsive eater for alcoholic, we identify absolutely. So when you read the book and they talk about the problems with alcohol, if you just put your problems with food, it works, right? So we find the problem in Bill's story. Bill talks about what happened to him and how it happened. If you haven't read Bill's story, please do so. You know, and one of the things I discovered from reading this is that there's two things happening. And we talk about our problem with our food. And then I think what they talk about that we have an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind. So the allergy of the body tells us that, like anything that we're allergic to, we can't stop doing it. We can't stop taking it. Then we have the obsession of the mind, which ensures that we cannot recover on our own willpower. So we're kind of stuck, right? We got this allergy, and we can't stop doing it, and our own obsession, our own mind tells us that, you know, there's no way we can get around it. And most of us, I don't know how many of you guys have tried self-will, you know? Right. How good did that work, right? The book talks about it, you know, works well as far as it goes. But the problem is the obsession is stronger than the self-will, so you can't overcome it. If you've come to a critical position, now there's people out there that are just overeaters, and if they can stop for a particular reason, you know, we talk about this in the Big Book, they talk about different kinds of alcoholics. They also talk about it in the 12 and 12, about the different types, you know, the heavy drinker, the party person, that for a good reason can stop. But we're the type of people that have stepped on the other side of that line. So we've gone way beyond the part where we could just stop if we wanted to. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. So we're powerless to solve this problem. So where are we going to find, you know, the answer to this? Okay. Hi. There's a hand up right here. If you come pick that up, can you come over, please? So where are we going to find power? Okay. So lack of power is our dilemma. So our book says on page 45 is that we find it by the reliance upon a power greater than ourselves. So in the whole chapter about we agnostics, it talks about what are we going to do with people who don't believe in a God, or they are atheist, or whatever. They can still choose a God of their own understanding, someone other than themselves, right? I remember one of my friends' program. He said, well, he wanted his higher power to be a tree, and so great. So his sponsor told him, I want you to have direct personal contact with your higher power on a daily basis. So this tree that it was his higher power was like a mile down the road and a quarter mile off the road. So for a year and a half, he followed direction. He went and had personal contact with his higher power. And it kept him abstinent, you know? He goes, I'm getting really tired of this. He goes, you know, you could pick another God, you know? You don't have to pick the tree down the street, you know? So when we get there, it's like, where are we going to find the solution to our problem, right? If our problem is powerlessness, what's the solution?
Power.
Okay? Power comes from our Father in heaven, however you want to say it. You know, the goddess, the Buddha, whatever you want to call it, in many terms, you can call it whatever you want, as long as you're willing to surrender to that power. The three chapters talking about this, solution, chapter 2, 3, and 4, there is a solution, more about alcoholism. And chapter 4, we agnostics. In chapter 2, they talk about the power necessary to recover. What's necessary? So I'm just going to review that, not those chapters directly, but to give you an idea, you should go check those out if you want to do that. Chapter 3, more about alcoholism. We find out what happens to us if we don't find that power. You know, what's going to happen if we don't find the power? You know, and, you know, at the end, how do we find the power? You know, we got to surrender. And surrender's not, for me, I don't know about you, but surrender always meant to me giving up. And I wasn't a quitter. I'm not quitting, you know. However, in the case of my disease, I'm powerless. I can't fix it myself. I can't do it. I wish I could, you know. And I said, you know, the more, and I think the two slips I've had since I came in 91 had to do with me thinking I got this, even though I was absent for 14 years. And then I was absent for 7 years. cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it's too much for me. You know, I can't do this. And the fact that I was unconscious about taking a brownie and throwing it in my mouth. It's like, I mean, I had no awareness of it. And somebody said, do you know what you do that? I go, no, I had no idea. So, I don't like buffets for that whole reason. You know, just, especially we go to places where they have like, a lot of how events we have potluck, and so people bring in all kinds of different stuff. It's like, well, is that abstinent? Is that, you know? And it's hard for me. I'd much rather go to the restaurants or the home where I know where I can eat and that I'm going to get what I need and not have to worry about it, you know? So that works for me. So when we talk about finding the power and finding the solution to our problem, we need to take some steps, right? And so the third column there, the goals are to, for the action necessary to recover. So what actions do we have to do? What my sponsor asked me to do if I call with a particular problem, he goes, okay, you got 30 minutes to be really upset about this. Jump down, scream, throw stuff, whatever you want to do. He goes, because his direction to me is that if we don't really experience the upset about it, it's going to be like a BB in our head, driving us crazy. So because then, once you've exhausted all that, I want you to start writing down some action steps. What are you going to do? Or what could you have done instead? You know? What could I have done instead of throwing a brownie in my mouth? How could I be more conscious of what was happening? I'm sure on some level I went, I shouldn't do that. You know? Oh, like a brownie should be like a big warning, right? Brownie, step away. You know? Step away. I can't have that. So I've got to work on some ways for me to have some kind of a emotional, mental connection where I can say, not mine. But, you know, and I think it had to be some level of not spiritually fit for myself for me to actually have that happen. So I'm curious how that actually took place. So how do we find this power? Okay. So step 1, 2, and 3. We'll go over our steps in a second, but step 1, we're powerless. Step 2, came to believe the power in ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God's ministry. Right. And you can find those all in the big book, right? I actually like this one part about step 3, because some people say, you know, my life's kind of a wreck now because I took step 3 and I turned it over to God. And well, how come my life's not better? What my sponsor pointed out to me, he said, you know, we don't turn anything over in step three. He goes, we made the decision to turn it over. Okay? And then the action steps of actually surrender to God are 4 through 12. He says, he makes an example. He says, listen, I'm going to go to San Diego. I make a decision to go to San Diego. But I don't pack the car. I don't put gas in it. I don't get on the highway and drive. I don't get to San Diego. I'll take the steps necessary. So we're willing, we create some willingness in step 3. And do you all know when it says that we should do the inventory?
What time frame we should?
After step 3, anybody know? Right away. Immediately, absolutely. Yeah, I've heard some people say, well, you should wait a year, you should wait. Now, people are dying with that stuff, you know? I mean, yeah, take it right away. Go right away. Now, our program has 170 questions that you do. As part of the inventory. I'm not recommending that you do a different inventory. I'm just going to show a different approach that I think helps us with our 10th step a lot, and it will go from there. So first we have to know what our problem is, and then how to find the power, and the steps, action steps necessary. So this is the first page that we're going to talk about. In step 4, in the 12 and 12, the second page, talks about the basic instincts in which we have self on how we create self. And because it makes an inventory really easy, the first page of the 12 and 12, it talks about that we have these natural instincts. We have the natural instincts for survival, for acknowledgement, for sex, for abilities that we be considered connected with our communities. Those are natural things we're supposed to have. The problem is that when we get out of bounds with any of those, and usually when Bill was talking about shortcomings and character defects. And people ask, well, how come he didn't use the same term if they mean basically the same thing? He just hated to use the same word over and over. So I've heard, in fact, my wife says, shortcomings are something I don't have enough of, and character defects are something I have too much of. So what we asked is we asked that our character defects be removed, and he calls it shortcomings. He's doing steps 6 and 7. So from the 12 and 12, they talk about these instincts right here, and he lists them here, this particular, in three different areas: the social instinct, the security instinct, and the sex instinct. And so
I'll get them for
thank you. Rock. Thank you. So when we're out of balance in these areas, it starts to create a problem for us. And we could find those in 12 and 12, step 4, the first couple of pages. If you want to look that up, you can find that. And so when we have these defects, these instincts that get out of order, we start to have problems in our life, you know. And that's when eating comes in, that we start to feel bad about something, we have a resentment about something, we have a fear about something. The Big Book talks about 4 different inventories. And those are actually connected within this 170 questions. So we have resentment, and the Big Book talks that the resentment, I'm sorry, I should hold this up. The resentment is the number one offender, causes more problems than anything else. Next, that would be fear. The third inventory is on sex, and the fourth inventory is things other than sex, like lying, cheating, stealing, things of those natures, okay, that we don't do a lot of, but still, maybe that's something that we have to look at. So I want to get to the inventory here in just a second here. Cool. So when they talk about the inventory, Bill starts talking about the inventory from a business standpoint. And starts talking about that the inventory, if you don't do inventory, you guys you have a business? If you don't do inventory of your business, what happens, sir?
You run into trouble.
That's right. You know, you don't have enough product. You didn't have enough, you know, what it goes on. And so it's a fact-finding situation. And so he uses the terms of business over to the words they use for step number 4. So fact-finding and searching and fearless about the truth about ourselves. So he says in a business, we need to make a fact-finding and finding about the truth about the stock in trade. What do we got here? What kind of things do we have that we have to put on special because they didn't sell? What do we have to order more of? Things of that nature. So we're looking at those parts of ourselves which we'd like to get rid of or not working for us, right? And so that's the first part of the inventory. What are we going to do? We're going to disclose damaged and unsaleable goods. We're going to disclose what's wrong, okay? Find our flawed thinking processes, okay? And we all know that our disease is a problem in our mind. It's expressed in our body as well. That goes back to step 3 for a second. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understand him. Will is our thinking, like last will and testament. And action and life is our actions. So we're turning our thoughts and our actions over to a God of understanding on a regular basis, okay? To get rid of them promptly without regret. To get rid of them without regret. We want to get rid of these parts of ourselves which are causing us to do what? Eat. Eating is what? An outward manifestation of what? An inner problem. Okay? We all have some inner reason behind it. Who knows what it is? That the 4-step is going to tell us what it is. And the greatest thing about the 4-step, when you're done with it, I don't know about you, but I've been to a lot of therapy in my life, you know? And not to necessarily attack a therapist in any way, but what we found, I'd go to therapy and they would say, okay, what do you think? I go, why am I here? If I knew what the hell was wrong with me, I wouldn't be here, right? But in this situation, you get to lay, and I was afraid about the inventory because I thought, I already know how bad I feel about myself. So I don't want you to lay it out all in front of me again, you know? However, the difference is when I left therapy, I was just left with, okay, all the stuff I get to carry with me. In this case, in our 12-step program, we have to give them to God who removes them. He doesn't fix it, he removes it. So if we have the opportunity to have it removed, what a great thing, okay? Okay. So the stock in trade that is damaged is resentments, fears, and the harms done to others, okay? So the next page is or is that you can use it in your head at any time. So we're going to talk about doing the inventory and doing it from a column perspective. So for example, in the inventory in the columns, we go top to bottom, not across, all the way down on each column, and then move across. So the first thing I'm going to list out is person, place, or thing, who I'm angry at. You remember what the big book says about anger, right? Cannot afford it. It's very, very, I love the language of the time, the dubious luxury of normal men. It is the number one offender. You know what they did to me, right? So what we're doing with this is that we can use this, whom I'm upset with. I've heard many guys in AA and also in HAL talk about this. And so I'll give an example. This one guy was talking about, he's really upset with the IRS. He didn't like the IRS. Do we like the IRS? None of us, right? And they said, so, what happened? Well, they want to put me in jail. Okay? And if I go into jail, what aspects of myself are going to be affected? On that page, we're listed the three aspects. So security aspect, social aspect, sexual aspect will all be, instinct will all be affected, you know, in a good or bad way, depending on how you look at it. And it says then, on the fourth column, what did I do, if anything, to set trains of circumstances to cause that situation to happen? I didn't pay my taxes. All right. What's the character defect? Lying and cheating. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And another time I heard a gentleman talk about he was very angry at his wife. That was his major resentment. And what did she do? She tried to divorce him three times. Yeah. Was that going to affect his social aspect, his sexual aspect, and his security? Absolutely. And so he said, what did he do, if anything, to cause that to happen? Well, he went out on her three times. Mm-hmm. What is that? Lying and cheating. So way over, his character defect is lying and cheating. And if you see that, and you see this column all the time, all these people they're angry with. Now, sometimes people talk about, well, can we have a resentment based upon I didn't do anything? Of course. You know, say maybe child abuse. Child is abused as a child. Didn't do anything about it. Didn't do it. Didn't cause any of it. But as a result, they have this resentment. And we know resentment will end up hurting us if we don't do something about it. Right?
Question?
Yes, ma'am.
So, like, just in terms of this model, where
sure.
does the lying and cheating sort of fit in?
Column five? Mm-hmm. Where I've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and insecure?
He's on this.
Yeah.
Which character defects caused me to do what I did or caused me to want to hold on to old resentment?
What did I do?
Even though I had done nothing to cause it.
Okay.
So what it's number five. What did I do? So in the case of this gentleman, he had infidelity with his wife. That's what he did. So what was his character defects there? Dishonest, obviously. Self-centered and frightened and inconsiderate. Okay. So you list all those things there. So when you get to five, six, and seven, you know what character defects you're actually getting rid of. You know what you're actually asking to get rid of. So if you don't know, how do you know if it's gone or not, right? And so the idea that I think it works really well for me is that these defects, when you get to them, you get to look at them, then you get to give them to your sponsor or another person. And then you have steps six and seven, humbly asking to remove our shortcomings, you know. And we're totally ready for have to remove our character defects. That's six and seven. So after you do six and seven, now we get to step eight and nine, right? Step eight and nine is made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them. So what happens after going through here, the gentleman I talked about probably owes an amends to his wife, wouldn't you say? So as a sponsor or somebody going to somebody with the inventory, I sit down and I write down names of people, places, and things for them to take care of as step number eight and nine. And I have them put in three different categories. I have them put down ones they could do right away, ones they don't want to do at all, never. And I just let them do that, right? And then maybe. So they can date it. So sometimes you'll meet somebody and you'll say, I need to make amends to you. I'm in this program of recovery. Most people will you know, be very happy about that. Not necessarily all the time. If you owe people money, if you've stolen from them, of course, you got to pay it back, things of that nature. So the great thing I like about thinking about the columns is that during your day, and the 10th step, we talk about 10th step, you can do a 10th step using this perfectly. And 10th step is continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. So you're driving along during the day, for example, I get this a lot because I get really kind of irritated with drivers. So somebody does something in front of me, and I'm like, right? So I can work, I don't want to hold the resentment. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be upset the rest of my day. So, okay, what am I mad at? That driver that did that, what did he do? He cut me off, okay? What could that affect me? My security, sure. I get injured, you know, I don't know about my sex instinct, but my security instinct, for sure. But what did I do if anything? Well, maybe I did nothing, okay? Maybe I was falling too close. I know. And then I could look at it and said, you know, where was I selfish and considerate? And I could let it go. And you could get through that inventory, that 10th step, in your head right away. And then at night, you could do the same kind of thing, using the columns as you will. And I think it's a good way to do our 10th step, you know, at the end of the day. So as we go on, we also do the same kind of inventory with fear and with sex relations and with things other than sex. And all three of the columns are in your packet. So you can use those. Doing inventory is an important thing. You know, we continue to take personal inventory in step 10. And then also, my wife actually talks more about this as well. So also, in your 10th step, we can do, what did I do good today? It's not always about, you know, beating ourselves up, right? What did I do? Or what could I have done different? What could it be a good action step, you know? You know, one of my pet peeves is I'm driving somewhere, especially I'm getting on the freeway to go to work, and I got about, you know, 10 inches between me and the car in front of me, and somebody has to want to come in there. I'm like, oh, no, you're not getting in there. I got to let that go, you know, because I don't want to get in a car accident, so I let them go. So one of the things you can use, and you can use this as a regular basis, how can I change how I'm feeling today? And you can do it anytime during the day. I'm feeling kind of uncomfortable. What's going on? Oh, I'm feeling upset about my boss at work. What did they do? You know? You don't have to write it down. You can do it right in your head. You know? What part of yourself did it affect? My social, sexual, security? What's all those natural instincts were threatened? Because when we start to have a resentment or a fear or some kind of, one of those three aspects have been threatened somehow. And then we get upset. And when we get upset, instead of what we want you guys to do, all of us, is we don't go out and go eat, right? That's the whole idea. We don't use our drug of choice to go out and try to calm us down from dealing with that issue. So anyway, that's my presentation so far. Do you guys have any questions or help or sharing you'd like to do about what you did in your inventories and how things work for you? Could you come to the mic, please?
Sure. Oh, I signed one. I'll sign again. Marcy, compulsive overeater from Tucson. Hi, guys. You had started talking about if you were abused as a child and that you did nothing, you know, you did nothing to cause that. And then we went on a different tangent. So I wasn't quite sure what your answer was to that for resolving that in the fourth step.
What it says basically in the big book to do is that if we have a resentment for it, we gotta do something for ourselves. For example, if you're afraid of heights, you don't have any question of that, anything like that. But if it's getting in the way of your life, going up an elevator or going on an airplane, you gotta write about that and do something about it. A child that's abused, even though I hate my parent or whoever the person is, that resentment will hurt them. And so the whole idea is that how do I release that and not carry it with me? Because, you know, I don't know about you, but that kind of stuff, you can really deep-seated, you end up eating over for sure. But the book talks about what to do with that. And Into Action chapter, and Into Action, maybe we'll speak about that. Yeah. How about somebody else talking about how they did their inventory or what was significant? Or what did you find out about your inventory? Would you like to share about that? Can you come up to the mic, please?
Hi. My name is Barbara, compulsive eater from Albuquerque.
Hey, Barbara.
And I just recently, I'm in the middle of doing 8 and 9 on an inventory that I just worked on, and I've been let go from a job of 17 years. And yeah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. And so when I had been talking with my sponsor, it was the frog in the pot of boiling water analogy. It, for the last 2 years, it was starting to get kind of hinky, but I wasn't about to leave. And I was very much steeped in my recovery, and I was explaining to her, you know, this is what's going on. And I said, you know, I don't think it's time to go, and I'm going to keep working, you know, my recovery with this. So the recovery was, you know, all the way top to bottom. But what wound up happening is 2 months prior to my departure, he had told me that there were economic problems and one of the two of us would go. And at the end of the line, 2 months later, he told me this long list of things that I had done wrong. And basically, here's a box, get your stuff, give me your key, don't touch your computer, and get out after 17 years. And what happened was he was ready to throw me out the door, and I said, wait a minute, I've been here 17 years, and I really do. I have something I want to say to you. And he was like, he was all battening down the hatches. And my higher power came right through my mouth and my brain. Instead of saying something nasty, I just said, I want to, you know, your father-in-law and your mother-in-law gave me a job when there once wasn't one. And I wish you only good things. I have been given nothing but good from this experience. And I wish you only the best. And if there's anything that I've done that might have offended you, I apologize. It was never my intent. And I thought, who the hell just said that? And so, you know, my sponsor has been with me every step of the way, and I said, look, if I've got to make amends, I don't understand where I got to make them. And so I sat down with an inventory very similar to this. It was actually out of the blue catalog, or the blue booklet that's been renamed. It was called Into the Steps, and it was an 8-column inventory. And as I went through that, I'm sorry to make this such a belabored story, she kept saying to me, your side of the street is clean, your side of the street is clean. And I said, well, what did I bring to the table here? And after doing the inventory, what I brought into this was emotional insecurity. That was what we discovered. That was what, you know. And so what do we do with that piece of information? Well, ultimately, what it brought me to was that I was beginning yet another 12-step program for yet another issue. And I know this is about inventory, but the upshot was basically what's happening is my living amends is that I'm working that program. So sometimes working this and just laying out bare leads me to a place that I didn't anticipate, because I really thought I was going to have to go and say, I'm sorry that you fired me, and I'm sorry I was such a bad employee, even though I don't think I was a bad employee, even though you told me that 2 months prior we had economic problems, you son of a bitch, excuse my French. And none of that. She said, if you need to make amends to him, it will come down the line. You just get this stuff out on the paper. You be willing to look at it, deconstruct it. And so at this point, there's, you know, those types of things, the obsequiousness, the fear, approval seeking, all of that stuff is the stuff that came up and what had to be looked at. And so for today, that's what I'm looking at in light of this circumstance. It only happened on April 21st, and I'm still very raw from it. But I have been knee deep in program and working it like a banshee to get free from this. And this inventory, by God, don't skip it. That's all I'm going to say. If you accept this as requirements for your recovery, do not skip the inventory. Your life will change, and it will change for the better. So take what you like and leave the rest on that.
Thank you.
Somebody else? And the other thing, too, is sometimes people can try to be so thorough that they keep postponing it. Or they'll have somebody say, you know, just get it done. Well, there's a happy medium in there. If you just try to slide through it because you want to get it done, you're going to miss something. And if you're deep, deep into it and you've got a perfectionistic thing going on, you'll never finish it. So it's like, look at it deeply, pray about it, whatever you got to do to flesh out the biggest secret. And one of the things that my sponsor had me do is say, what's something I don't want to tell you today? Which was really powerful for me, because we all like to hide those little things, are uncomfortable or questionable, the fear comes up, all that stuff. So I can't say enough about the inventory. Doing it as thoroughly as you possibly can. And that doesn't mean that you'll never do another one again. It, you know, in a couple of years, look at it. But it's also awesome to do an inventory on a specific issue that might come up. And you get to flesh it out. And the writing, I call my writing my glue to God. And the more I am willing to write, especially with my hand, because when I do it on the computer, I'm moving so fast that I don't get to slow down and think. And so that's just, I know I've done both ways and they're both good, but when I do it with my hand, and as somebody said it earlier, and I do this too, if it's a big issue, I do it with my left hand. And it's amazing what comes up. Sometimes the lettering is this big on a because I can't control it like I can my right hand. But the biggest thing that I am learning in life is to slow down. I'm actually more productive when I slow down than when I'm Superwoman trying to handle it all. So thanks for letting me share.
You're welcome.
One of the things I've been directed to do and I've had my sponsors do is on a particular issue that they have, to do the 30-day questions on it. Write down a history of your money problems, your whatever, you know, and then do all those questions related to a specific issue rather than related to food. I mean, it seems to help in other aspects as well. Who else would like to share about either their inventory, problems with the inventory, what they got out of it? Please.
Hi, I'm Linda. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Linda.
And you know, I've done several inventories. I was introduced to 12 Steps through another program, and that's kind of a softer program than CHOW, but this is a little harder. But I did a lot of inventories that were yes, no, and maybe, just because my denial was so strong. I uncovered the fact that I grew up in a chaotic alcoholic home, and I had painted a perfect childhood. You know, so I believed the lies I told myself. And to uncover that took a long time. So denial is my first defense mechanism, always has been. It probably came before the eating, which is amazing because, you know, we eat from birth. But I think that is my primary cover story. So there was a lot of my life that was oblivious to me. I didn't know about it. And the longer I'm in program, the more it is revealed. So each time I do another inventory, I see things differently. And it's not that I lied before, it was I didn't know. And so now I know more about me. And what I found was that by not acknowledging my feelings at the time they were happening and not telling the truth about what was going on in my life, I learned to be a liar to myself and to others. And I learned to be an unfeeling person. And eventually it got to where I didn't feel the good feelings or the bad feelings. I just didn't feel. And that's where I was pretty much when I got here. And I had to learn how to let the feelings in. And that question earlier about what you do about childhood abuse, my sponsor said my job was that I'm still using those old tools to deal with life today that I needed to survive then. And so that's my responsibility in it, is that I'm bringing it into my adulthood. And at 67, I don't need those tools. Mm-hmm. They're not helpful. They don't work for me anymore. And so being able to look back at the issues, whether it was physical, verbal, or emotional, or sexual abuse, whatever it was, being able to tell it, put a name on it, label it, let go of it, and not have to live in that fear anymore and not have to live in that reactiveness. You know, my first inclination is shut down and deny. And so I have to stay consciously aware on a daily basis of what I'm feeling about different situations and what's going on. An example is I used to go to this Wednesday night meditation meeting, and there was a huge confrontation between who happened to be the secretary then and another member, and they had this big fight. I haven't been back to the meeting. Neither the leader, well, the secretary was the big fight, so she couldn't have, but none of the members there called him on their stuff. And in my family, when shouting started, somebody got hurt. And so I didn't realize that's why I just didn't fit that meeting into my schedule anymore for a long time, and I had to work on it. Okay, why am I not going to this meeting? And it came up, okay, this is still my fear from my childhood. And that's what I find guides a lot of my life, is this unconscious stuff from back then, that if I don't pull it out and look at it, I can't change it. So the inventory really helps to dig down and find out where stuff is coming from and to stop living in the past. Thanks for letting me share.
When I was first getting abstinent, I had a difficulty with perception. And it happened in AA as well, because I heard people say, you know, if you got sober, your life would get better. And what I heard was, if you stop drinking, your life would get better. And I couldn't fit the idea that not drinking and sobriety were two exclusive situations. So I had a lot of trouble with surrendering that aspect of it. Same thing with food. It's like, you know, having been able to get abstinent really quick and lose all my weight and go from compulsive eater to maintenance food in 30 days, and people hate me for it at the same time, but men tend to lose quicker. But it's a curse and a blessing at the same time. You know, that I've got to keep looking at different things. So I don't want to go out there and do it again. I don't, if I have another recovery, I don't know. I know I got plenty more going out. I don't know if I can get back again, you know. And I know people that go in and out and go in and out and go in. And eventually, you know, it's just going to get you. It's just going to get you. My mind, it just destroys our mind. I can't do that. Well, who else would like to share about their inventory, what they did? Please.
My name is Sandy. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi. And thank you for your share today. It was really great. And everybody's share. I've been actually working on a fourth step, and that's why I wanted to come to this workshop today. And I've done the 170 questions before, and this time I'm doing a little different inventory where I'm doing the columns.
Nice.
And working in a 12-step workshop on it. And I just like felt the power of recovery in my recent experience with it, because I made my list and I picked, and a situation came up where the one person on my list was my niece, who is relocating to Australia, and she's leaving like in 2 weeks. And I felt like that pressure, like I have to get this done because I want to say everything I need to say in this one, you know, in this one bon voyage party that she's having. And we know that's probably not going to happen. But what I did find out in doing it, because I worked on my first three columns on it, you know, I resent, I feel the cause. And what I experienced was I got to look at myself, my part in these character defects that are going on, and my expectations and some of the things that I'm, the part that I play in it. And it just so happened that we had a dinner party with this part of the family, and I was able to, what it did for me was it released some of the emotional charge that I would have had I seen her and I hadn't done the work. Like, I would have, you know, anyway, it was a miracle, really, that I was able to just, you know, wish her well and not... you know, and just listen to what she had to say, and rather than bringing on what was done to me, or, you know, that victim role that it's so easy to play when we haven't done an inventory on it to see, you know, our part in things. And so it's just like, it's just happening in the right time, you know, like when the student's ready, the teacher appears, and it's like this great opportunity that I'm having right now to be working on that fourth step. And so so I'm still doing it because it's a work in progress, because there's so many situations. But I think some of the character defects that I'm seeing or being revealed to me are, there's a pattern, and that pattern is what I do continually. And I can't change those patterns unless I look at them. And the only way, and the first thing I want to do, you say inventory, I want to run. I want to run out the door as fast as I can. So it's like, it's just great that I'm seeing that. It's great that I'm willing, you know, that God gives us this gift, and then I'm willing to look at it. So I know I'm not going to resolve everything before she leaves, but I'm able to show up as a sober person and listen to her, you know, and to be present in that way. And, you know, the amazing thing is she confided some things in me that she might not have had I shown up not abstinent or not, you know, present and emotionally charged of, you know, you did wrong to me and I've got to, you know, so you owe me an apology. And then half the time when you think you owe somebody an apology, you know, or they owe you an apology, you know, maybe you owe them an apology. It's like just the way the steps work us. So I'm just really grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, please. It's amazing how much better people get when we deal with our own issues, huh?
She's so much better. Who else would like to share? Have a few more minutes.
I've not started the inventory. I'm Susan, compulsive eater. I've not started the inventory, and I just wondered if I feel that I'm avoiding it. 170 questions overwhelms me, and I just wondered if anybody had some ideas on how to help me get in the mind frame of doing it and not being overwhelmed by it. I am enjoying hearing the benefits of it, but I just would love some ideas and suggestions if that was a similar experience you faced and how you were able to overcome it.
Hi, I'm Beth. I'm a compulsive eater, and just based on your question, thank you for asking. I was actually excited by it. I'm kind of like, let's get down to the bottom of things. I've had several different four steps, and so to see how four step was just a new opportunity, part of me was doubtful. I've got everything figured out. I don't need an inventory. I'm a Miss Know It All. But what helped me set a boundary was just I set my alarm clock for 5 minutes, and I'm like, 5 minutes of writing, and that's good. And I would do it at like a 15-minute break at work. I would, you know, sit down for 5 minutes. So I think, like anything in program, it's one day at a time, one moment at a time. And when I look future trip and like, oh my gosh, you know, I remember I was writing on Bill Cizik questions, and there's what, 236 or something, and I was like, it's taken me 4 months to write on 50 of them. I can't believe it. So like with anything, it's there's no rush, there's no time limit, but as I've heard other people share about service, just do it. And we do the footwork, and God takes care of the rest. So I just encourage you to be gentle with yourself and just give yourself, 5 minutes and a checkbox. Yay, I accomplished this 5 minutes, and little things that help us stay motivated. Thanks.
Hi, Barbara, compulsive eater. Roughly the same thing that was just said, except one question a day, one day at a time. And that's basically what our literature talks about in the tools. And, you know, you get a free pass on some of them. It's like, well, were you an only child? Well, no.
Done.
We're done. One question at a time, one day at a time. The interesting thing about this inventory is that for many, it's given away piecemeal. Some will save it all up and give it at the end, but, you know, it's a little different configuration coming out of the booklet because we're doing one question. We do one question a day as part of our recovery program at the tools that we accept as requirements for our recovery.
Thanks. Did that help?
Yes, so much. Thank you.
One more.
Hi, I'm Linda, compulsive eater. I heard a speaker say that a good carpenter builds a staircase with all the stairs the same size. And believing that the 12-step program was built by a good carpenter who happened to work through humans, I had to make the fourth step the same size. And that was really hard because so many of the other ones seemed so easy. And then I discovered that the fourth step is not the hardest step. The sixth step is really the hardest step, but I didn't know that at the time. So I tried to bring it down to size by just remembering a carpenter makes the steps all the same size, and we have 12 of them, and we just walk up the stairs. Thanks for letting me share.
We have time for a short burning desire. Anybody would like to share before we end? It's almost 3:15.
Yeah.